are learning Perak Bays with the Malbim. What we're going to be doing this time is going through the whole Perak Bays with the insides of the Malbim. We're not going to be reading all Malbim inside. I'm actually mostly going to be reading it outside, I think. We're going to see. And then all the way to the end, actually, the last Pesach this time, we're going to go a little bit more in depth and have a conversation about it. Last time, I was still trying to feel out the style, so we did only like the first Pesach, or first like sort of Pesach, first sort of eight Pesachim, more in depth inside. Now we're going to do the whole thing and focus on one piece, and I want to do that in the future, and I'm just feeling a little bit of FOMO that we're not going to get through the whole Megillah, but we'll get through however much we can, and we'll call it a day, okay? So again, Malbim is going to totally give us like new dimensions of layers into what's going on here, okay? Let's go. Malbim, Perak Beis. Achar Hadvarim Ha'ele, after this, these things that happened in the first Perak, and that was, again, Achashverosh having this party, and then killing Vashti, and now he sort of, like, wakes up and is like, oops, okay? That's where we're starting. Achar Hadvarim Ha'ele, Kishoch Chamas HaMalach Achashverosh, Zachar as Vashti. After all these things happen, and the king is no longer angry, he remembers Vashti, V'es Asher Asasa, and what he did to her, V'es Asher Nigzar Laha, and what he commanded on her. So again, the difficulty in this pasuk is like, why can't you just say one of those things, right? Or like Vashti, V'asher Asasa, Vashti, and what happened to it? But it's like he remembers Vashti and what he did to her and what he decreed upon her. It's like what. So Malbim says that Achashverosh is like, oh shoot, moment, encapsulated three different aspects of what happened. The first is that, again, this is like fascinating to read with Malbim. It's just, I don't know, it's a different. You know, perspective on the story that you see when you read different mefarshim on it. So Malbim's perspective is this: he was upset. He missed Vashti. He realized that like it's not going to be so easy to find another Vashti. Vashti had great yichus, and according to the Malbim, she actually had ma'alo seha. That's what he says. He missed her yichus, and he missed her ma'alo seha. He missed like her milos. And he was like, so he remembers that he kills Vashti, right? V'es Asher Asasa, and he remembers that Vashti, because of her milos and because of her yichus, caused her to stand up to him like she did. Which, again, it sounds like he's now considering that what she did is probably, like, a lot more justified than in the moment, what he thought. And now he's like, listen, if I find someone else who has her yichus and who has her milos, that's going to happen again. And then I'm going to have to kill her. And if I kill her, the people are never going to stand for me. Isn't that fascinating? He's like, if I find someone like her, it's very likely that history will repeat itself, and then I'm going to have, like, a coup on my hands, because they're going to say that I kill my wives, and no one's going to do that. And the second is, V'es Asher Nigzar Aleha, even if I do find someone like that, there's no way that she's actually going to come to the palace, because she's going to be afraid that I'm going to kill her. Right? This reminds us of, like, Henry VIII, right? And his eight wives. How many wives does he have? Eight wives, right? He just, like, was always Anne Boleyn and her sister and whoever else, right? He's worried that he's going to have this reputation and no one's going to come. So, he explains this to his advisors and they give him advice that solves all these problems for him. Let's read on. Vayomer Nari HaMelech Misharsav, his servants say to him, Yivakshu LaMelech Neros Besilos Tovos Mara. Forget about the Yichus. Forget about the Yichus. Just find beautiful women. You're the king, as we spoke about last time, right? You're the king. You're such a king. You were a hegyo, which no one's going to ever talk about. And now you're the king, and you're the most powerful king. You don't need someone with the yichus. What do you need that? Forget about it. Don't get the yichus, and don't get all the chip on the shoulder that comes with the yichus. Just get someone who's beautiful. V'yafkid ha-melech pekidim b'chol medinos malchuso v'yikabtu es kol naros besulas tovas mara el shushan abira el beis ha-nashim. Okay, this is what you should do. Also, don't make it voluntary. Don't make a voluntary draft, because then you're right. Some people will be scared that you're going to kill them. Make it a mandatory draft, right? Elect officials to go and collect all the pretty people. So just get pretty. Don't get yichos or any milos. And go make it a forced draft so that everybody has to come. Al yad Hegai Sris HaMelech Shomer HaNashim. And give them over to Hegai. V'nason Tamur Keyam. And put him in charge of them for a year. And again, this is part of his strategy, right? Get them accustomed to subjugation. Don't let them come straight and ask their opinions and have a whole conversation with them and blah, 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 right? Collect them forcibly and then subjugate them at the hands of someone else for a year. And by the time you see them, they'll be very used to like just doing whatever you say. Interestingly, right? Again, this puts in perspective Esther's fear in coming to Achashverosh without permission. Right? Because this wasn't a small thing in Achashverosh's mind. This was basically the main criteria by which he picked a wife. He had a reputation for having killed wives who didn't do what he wanted them to do. And his whole criteria for picking a new wife is someone who's going to be pretty and who's not going to do anything against him. Doesn't have yichus, doesn't have milos, doesn't have anything that's going to cause her to ever do anything that he doesn't want her to do. And so you see Esther's, like, visceral fear and why it really was a life-threatening thing, right? We know how it ends up. So it's like she comes in, she's so afraid, he stretches out a scepter, like, shkoyach, right? But they skip the whole part of her being afraid and all, like, the kids' perm spiels. But we understand it now, right? This was a massively embedded expectation in her role as the queen, is to never stand up against him. Okay, v'na'ar asher titav b'nei ha'melech timloch tachas vashti v'titav ha'davar b'nei ha'melech v'yas king. Okay, so that's what you should do. And Ahasuerus is like, you know what? That's a good idea. And that's what he does. Okay, and now we switch. Now we switch to talking about the perspective of, that was all of that, the first paragraph in this, was from the perspective of Ahasuerus. Now we're going to the perspective of Mordechai and Esther. Now we've refocused the camera on Mordechai and Esther. And again, this is all actually by way of introduction. Malbim ends Perek Beis by saying, okay, now the scene is set. Now we can get into the actual, so to speak, Purim story. But we're not there yet. Okay? Pasuk Hey, Ish Yehudi Haya B'Shushan Habira Ushmo. Mordechai ben Ya'ir ben Shimi ben Kish Ish Yimini. Again, listen to the Yichus. Everyone who's introduced has Yichus except for Ahasuerus. It's fascinating. I didn't look it up. I should look it up. If he's the only one who doesn't have a Yichus named when he's introduced in Tanakh. Okay? Interestingly, again, this is something that I never really thought about. Ish Yehudi Haya B'Shushan Habira. The reason that Malbim says this pasuk goes into it, Malbim says that now the Psukim spend a lot of time talking about the risk that Mordechai and Esther took in her not coming to Ahasuerus when this mandatory draft was issued, and how it emphasizes how much she was forced, right? Anusa. She was a forced captive, so to speak, of Ahasuerus. There was nothing that was at her will. So again, Mordechai was a known person. Ish Yehudi haya b'Shushan Habira. Haya, right? He was a well-known person, and he was already in Shushan, which is interesting. I don't know why. I always kind of imagined, like, Mordechai and Esther. Maybe I saw this in some sort of, like, bad animated depiction of the Purim story at some point. I always imagine, like, Mordechai and Esther off on some farm somewhere, right? And, like, a horse rides in and, like, knocks on the door and, like, takes Esther away on the horse. Is that how you guys pictured it?
Not at all.
No. How did you picture it, Bracha?
Like, that they were in this, like, honestly, kind of like a basement apartment. I don't know why.
Right. So that's, like, he was in Shushan. He was in Shushan. Right, he didn't,
like,
have any...
kind of, like, very condensed that, like, people were living, like, one on top of each other.
Exactly. It's so funny. I don't know why I never imagined it like that. Right, but yeah, exactly. Mordechai and Esther lived in Shushan, right? This new capital that the king moved to, that's where Mordechai lived. Like, they couldn't avoid the draft because he was in the city, right? He was right there. He wasn't, like, on the countryside that he'd been like, I didn't know about that. Sorry, I didn't know. My bad. Right, like, he was right there in the capital city. And apparently he was, like, a well-known person in the capital city. It's so beautiful when they sing that, right, in the tune of Eicha. Asher hagla nevucha netzer melech bavel, right? And again, he was, Galus Yehoyachin was the Galus of the nobles, right, of the sort of the upper class of the Jews. So he's not just like a schnook that could be like, oh, whatever, no one cares if I give my you know, adopted daughter or not. Like, he was well known, and still he basically just totally snubbed this degree. Like, he omenes hadasa, he Esther, bas doda, ki ein la avaim, v'hana'ara yifas toar, v'tovas mare, uvamosa v'yavima, lakha Mordechai lo labas, right? So he had fostered her. It seemed to be a known thing that he had fostered her. There was no one who you could say was responsible for her other than him, right? Meaning if she's found and he has not turned her in, then he's the one who's going to get the brunt of the punishment, according to all opinions. And she was pretty. Right, you're gonna be like, nah, I didn't think the king would like her. She was pretty, also. So, still, v'hi b'hishama dvar hamelech v'daso. Right, when the first declaration of the king asking everyone to come went out, and then v'daso, and then his rule that everybody had to come. Right, the mandatory draft went out. U'b'hi kabeitz. Right, when they were forcibly gathering naros rabos el shushan habira el yad hegai v'tila kach Esther. Right, Esther was taken. So that's the point here. Esther was forcibly taken, even though it was such a risk for them to basically pawn it off as if they didn't know about it. They did anyways, but she was found and she was taken. El beis hamelech al yad hegai shomer hanashim. Rabbi Rosenstein, I think it was Rabbi Rosenstein. I'm not sure. No, actually, I'm sure about this one. Yes, it was Rabbi Rosenstein. He talked about, you know, the fact that when we talk about Esther, again, we're sort of like in our childhood imaginations of who Esther was. He was like, when you read the story of the Megillah, you should think about Esther, like, close your eyes and think about who was, like, the starkest girl in your Beis Yaakov class. Right? The starkest girl, the one who was like, had the best midos and was the most, like, genuinely an Eved Hashem. And, like, you know, I'm thinking of one of my friends who right now has kind of hara, like, 7 boys, and she lives in Beitar, and her husband is learning full time. Like, she just, and she always had this, like, spiritual awesome neshama. I could tell you stories about her, but I'll do that a different time, right? And it was her. That was who Esther was. Like, don't think about fluffy Esther. Like, right? It was very weird that she was taken. Can you imagine that? Like, Biden issues a declaration that he's trying to find a wife, and, like, he takes, like, the best of the Base Yaakov girls. Like, what? You know what I mean? It's, like, weird. I used to say that with Trump, which I think had a different, like, emotional terminology to it. So I'm glad I don't have to put his name in anymore. And he basically has like a feeling that like she's gonna be it. That's what this is, right? Vatiza chesed lefanav. Why does she? Vatiza chesed is usually a phrase of like, you know, you deserve worse, but you've like found favor. Like people are not gonna treat you as harshly as you deserve, right? Malbim says because she really deserved to be punished. She had avoided this draft, right? She had avoided the mandatory draft, had to be taken, and she really deserved something much worse than what she got. But Vatiza chesed beinav. Right, he brushed it off. The Yivahal is Tamar Khan. He basically like tries to hurry up her turn because he has a feeling like she's gonna be it. The Esman Osela Sisla, the Esheva Hanaros, Hayar Uyos Lasesla, and again he treats her in a little bit like more of a mechubad way than anyone else who's there. Okay, so he gives her like the best things that are available. He gives it to her. Lohi Yida Esther Asama, Vyas Mulata. But Esther does not say where she's from. Why? Ki Mordechai tziva aleha asher lo sagi. Because Mordechai had commanded her. Why not? Malbim says this is part of their strategy of getting her out. Because they assume that what Sachasher is going to be looking for. Remember? Yichus. And somebody who's afraid to talk about where they're from, they probably has a pretty shvach, like somewhat shameful yichus. So Mordechai is basically telling Esther, if you don't, the best advantage to you is not to say anything about yourself. Because then they're going to assume the worst, because everyone else, I'm sure, is, you know, chalking up their yichus to who knows what. So they're going to assume the worst, and they'll let you go. So that was their attempted strategy. And again, it's interesting, right? Like, we feel like it was, like, some sort of, like, a deeper, maybe it is also a deeper, like, reason. And again, it says that a few times, but this is his first read. Is like, it was a strategy. It was a strategy to get her out of this whole thing, which doesn't work, obviously. Ubechol yom, not obviously, but as we know. Bechol yom v'yom, Mordechai mishalich lifnei chatzar beis hanashim. And every day, Mordechai would walk outside the gate. Lada says Shlom Esther to ask about the fate of Esther, about her peace, the peace of Esther. Umaye Aseba, and what is being done to her. So what does this mean? Two things, right? Mordechai wants to know the two things that we just said. He wants to know whether or not she's being punished because they hid her. So she is at risk and he understands that. So he wants to know, like, is she being treated okay, or was she subject to some sort of, like, you know, corporal punishment or whatever, corporal, some sort of governmental punishment because of, you know, them hiding her. And he also wants to know if their plan is working. Maybe they're thinking about letting her go. So those are the two dimensions of what he's trying to find out by walking up and down. Ubahagia tor na'ara v'na'ara levo el ha'melech ha'chashverosh mikit ha'yos la kidas ha'nashim shenim asar chodesh kichin yimalo yimei murkehem shisha chadashim b'sheman ha'mor v'shisha chadashim b'basamim uvatamruke ha'nashim uvazen na'ara ba'el ha'melech. Right after all this process of 12 months, basically they wanted her to be there in all the seasons so they could make sure that she's healthy, because that was Achashverosh's criteria, is pretty and healthy. Those were his only criteria. I didn't care about Yichus, I didn't care about anything else. And then the women all came to the king one at a time. Anything she asked for, she got. So again, Malbim reads this as like basically this was the price of her selling herself to the king. That she could ask for anything. I always thought it was like she could bring something with her. And Malbim says, like, no, she could just ask for whatever she wants. Anything she wanted. She wanted sheep, she wanted jewelry, whatever it was that she wanted, she asked for. And that was like basically her way of submitting willfully to the king. And she got to take it with her. This is obviously euphemisms that we hope that our children don't understand, which I don't think they do. It's like crazy criteria, right? Okay, ubahagia tor Esther, and when Esther's term came, bas avichayel dod Mordechai asher lakach lo levas lovo lamelech. Right, and we're like, wait, now we get Esther again, and now we have Riechus, right? Why are we going into Riechus here? Right? These are all questions that we kind of like, I mean, I've thought them in my head every year, and I'm like, I'm just like paying so much close attention to like hearing all the words of the Megillah that like I kind of like skip over that question in my head, right? And Mom goes into all of them. Why are we going into Riechus here? He says it's setting up a direct contrast. And again, the irony is insane, right? Imagine living here. It was 9 years from when this happened to when the Purim story happened, right? Imagine living and like, and you know that like you're, you know, your top class, top-notch valedictorian in Hebrew, Beis Yaakov student is the one who just got picked to go to Ahasuerus. Why? Because she's so exactly, ironically, not what he's looking for, right? He's looking for beauty and health. Okay, fine, so she's beautiful and healthy, shkayach, right? But what is she actually known for? Her yichas. She has good yichas, and what is, she's not, sorry, it's not about yichas, right? It's about what qualities does she have that she could pat herself in the back about, existentially, because of where she comes from. Mavim says, her midoseha, oh, tchunoseha, like her tchunos, her like natural attributes, or her affinities. Umidoseha and her midos, tovos, v'sichla shalem. She has good intellect. She has a wholesome intellect. All right, that's why we praise Esther. And she had it from her birth, again, from her parents, and she had it from her upbringing. She had it from nature and from nurture. So again, Ahasuerus cared about two qualities, and everyone was able to pick whatever they wanted and basically like, sell themselves to the king. Esther did not take anything, right? She refused that, and who she was, and again, why he really finds her appealing is ironically exactly the opposite of what he thought he was looking for and what this whole pageant, so to speak, was about, okay? Lo biksha davar ki imas asher yomar hegei sris ha-melech shomer ha-nashim bati Esther nosei schein ve'inei korabah. Right? She doesn't ask anything. She refuses to sell herself to him. Again, this is another insistence about how she was forced. Vatilakach, and again, that word again, right? And she was taken. Esther, el ha-melech ha-chashverosh, al beis malchus, b'chodesh ha-asiri, hu chodesh teves, b'shnash sheva l'malchuso. It's only the seventh year of his reign, right? He's really had quite a reign so far. V'yahav ha-melech as Esther mikol ha-nashim. And the king loves her from all of the wives. It doesn't say all of Basulos, all the people. It says all kol ha-nashim, all of his pre-existing wives, right? Ahasuerus is not only doing this for all of the, girls that he's trying to collect, but for sure, Mavim says, for sure, he already has other wives, and he says that for sure he loved them. He has for sure wives, and he had for sure pilagshim, right? He had, like, concubines and wives already that he had good feelings towards. And Esther, he loved. Again, it's like, what does he mean by that? What does the word love mean in this context? It's, like, fascinating to me, but a study for, I'm sure, months and months of a different time, right? The king loved her from all of the other women who we already had, but he's a chin v'chesed lefanav, and she like won him over. And that was his criteria here, right? She had to be pretty, and she had to be healthy, and what else? Whatever. She has to, he's a chin. That's how he's going to make a choice. It's going to resonate with him. That's what he's going to want to do. And but he's a chin v'chesed lefanav, mikola besulos, he likes her the best. We have some Keser Malchus Barosha, and immediately he crowns her king. And again, her turn has been pushed up. So it seems like, again, sort of happily, not everybody. She wasn't the last one in the line. V'yasam keser malchus b'rashavi m'licha tachas vashti. And she is crown king. V'yasam melech mishtes. Okay, so now we switch. So we understand. Esther was taken forcibly a bunch of times. We stress that. And now she has been crowned queen. And now we switch to Ahasuerus's strategies. Now Ahasuerus is the one strategizing. What's he strategizing to try to do? He wants to know, who is she? Who is she? She's, again, been so secretive about her background, presumably because she has some sort of shameful something, but he's trying to, like, butt her up. V'yasa malach mishta gadol. He does three things. V'yasa malach mishta gadol, chulsar av avadav, es mishta Esther. He calls it the party of Esther, right? He throws this huge blowout party, and he calls it by her name. Basically, Malbim says to try to, like, tempt her with kavod. Doesn't it feel good that this whole huge party is in your name? Wouldn't you like people to know more about you? Don't you want them to like write, do an interview of you and write it in a daily magazine, right? Like, come on. He's trying to like butter her up with some kavod so that she senses it and then tells everybody everything about her. It also, again, like, right, psychologically shows like there's a certain torment when you don't know somebody. Like, he wants to know her. He wants to know who she is. Who is she? This, again, is the piece that I'm not sure if I learned from Avi Rosenstein, but I think it was. I should ask him so I can give him credit. But he says, like, Esther was the best double agent that ever was, right? He had no, can you imagine, like, if Biden did this, right, and, like, a Frum Beis Yaakov kid got picked, she would have, like, a Hebrew name. We would all see her on television. We'd be like, that's a Frum chick, right? It would take, like, 5 seconds for us to know that, like, she's Frum. He had no idea who she was. This is it. He was the best double agent. And there's a measure somewhere that says that everyone tried to claim that she was, like, the French were like, she's mine, and the Germans were like, she's mine, and the Swiss were like, she's Swiss. All right, again, it wasn't those countries, obviously, back then, right? But everybody was trying to claim her. And Ahasuerus, can you imagine? Imagine meeting somebody, and you have no idea if they're French or German or Swiss or American or Canadian or British or South African. You have no idea who she was. But not that you don't know who she was. It's that she seems to be everything. That was Esther. It's kind of cool, right? It's the best. It's the best double agent. That's, again, shining clarity down the line, right, when Mordechai says to her, if you don't reveal yourself now, you're going to go down with... don't think you're you at Vubisavich Tovedu, right? You and your father's house will all be destroyed. Because had she not revealed herself then, she would have gone down as a double agent. Then nobody knew who she was. Until that point, nobody knew who she was. And had she not identified herself as the Jewish people, she would have died with nobody knowing who she was. That's how good of a double agent she was, right? She would have died and no one would have known. So again, okay? So he's trying to figure out who is she, which is obviously doomed to failure because she's outsmarting him big time. And he gives a tax levy to all of the countries, thinking that if she tells him, you know, it'll tempt her to tell him who her country is because then he'll treat it the nicest. And he gives out gifts, thinking that, you know, again, it'll tempt her to want her family and her culture and her background and her people, whatever, to be gifted. And they gather the girls a second time. Why are they gathering the girls a second time? Now they're gathering them all to send them home. Right? Esther's been chosen. Now they're They're trying to gather everyone again. Right? This is again interesting because we're going to see it gets contradicted in just a few psukim. But Esther didn't tell anybody because Mordechai told her not to, and she's always done what Mordechai has told her to do. And again, another switch. Okay, another context, another piece of the story is happening. Mordechai is in the Shara Melech, again in some prestigious kind of position. Katzaf, big son Viserish, Shnei Sarisei HaMelech, Mishomrei Hasaf, Vayivak Shalu Shluch, Yad B'Melech HaShverish. Again, we know this. Right, big son Viserish try to assassinate the king. Vivadaha Davar LaMordechai. Again, Mama says it's an ace, right? Mordechai sort of just intuited it or got, you know, Ruach HaKodesh is something. He doesn't use that word. All right, Mordechai understood from Hashgachas Hashem that this was happening. And Vayigad Esther Hamalka, and he tells Esther, Vatomer Esther Lamelech, the shame of Mordechai. And Esther tells the king in the shame of Mordechai. Mom says her telling the king in the name of Mordechai is another part of the nace, because Mordechai does not say to her to do it in his name. And we just learned that she does not do anything that Mordechai does not tell her to do, except for this. This is the first thing that Esther does that is not the will of Mordechai, is that she gives him credit where he didn't want, or he didn't need credit. He didn't ask for credit. That's better. He did not ask for credit, and she gives him credit. And again, we learn from here that the geula comes, right, from giving credit to people. What's the phrase? I don't know. I can't think of it right now. Had Omer Davar B'Shem Omra, right? Maybe geula, right? Someone who says something in the name of who said it brings geula. And again, it was a step outside of her comfort zone to do that, which is interesting because she wasn't told to do it. Okay, and again, the fact that Mordechai knew about this, again, to me, this is one of the most fascinating pieces of the Megillah, because, like, Mordechai could have just stayed quiet and let them assassinate Ahasuerus, and Esther would have gone home. And that would have been the end of the story. Right? And he doesn't, which is fascinating to me. This, I think, is the first mark of understanding who Mordechai and Esther is. V'yivkash ha-davar v'yimatze, and they seek after this, and they find that this is true. Vayitlu shneim al eitz, and they hang Bigson and Zeresh on a tree. They hang them. Vayikasev b'sefer divrayhem lifnei melech, and they write it in a specific sefer that is before the king. Right? They don't write it in the general chronicles because Malam says that Haman would have just gone and like erased it if he'd seen it. But they write it in the king's particular book that he has and that he accidentally like kind of forgets about. And again, what's the point of this? Malam says, here we're going to go inside for the first time, and do a small discussion on this. Okay. What happens? Bayim, right? We learn part, like, relatively far into this perek, we learn about Beis Son and Zeresh. So he says this, right? Again, you're going to recognize some of this. Term Yavol El Sibur Hatzara, Asher HaYel Yisrael, right? At this point, nothing really bad has happened. Something weird has happened, right? Esther has been taken, and it's bad for Esther and for Mordechai and whatever. But otherwise, Bnei Yisrael are still fine. Right, the first piece that we're introduced to as part of the story happens before there's any issues. 9 years before there's any issues, which is really fascinating, right? Hi, Chana. It's really fascinating. Like, it could have... I don't know if she heard me. Hi, Chana. Sorry, third time's a charm. Right? It could have happened partway through. Hey. We could have been learning about Ahasuerus and Haman and blah, 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 blah. And then Big Son of Sarah happens and Mordechai, right? But it doesn't. It happened all the way before. Why? What's he going to say, guys? Very famous?
Refuah Lamaka.
Good. Exactly. Right? Hikdim Refuah Lamaka. Because Hashem precedes the cure to the ailment. So this actually, this Malbim really gave me insight into what this meant. So here's where he goes with it, okay? What did you think it meant? What did I think it meant before now? What do you think it means? Maybe you guys probably have a lot more insight anyways before me. What do you think it means? What does it mean, hiktim rufulamaka? Stump, I thought it meant, right? Like, I thought the point of that, what does this mean? Like, Hashem had set up the pieces so that when Bnei Yisrael do tshuva down the line, he already has something in place to be able to save them, right? And Hashem always makes sure. It's not like he doesn't wait for us to do tshuva and then set up the pieces to cure us. Like, it's set, right? The board is set up so that we are cured, and the only question is, like, you know, we have to do our part. And it's already, like, right there, and Hashem could just snap his fingers and it'll go down. Which is, again, what he says, but he gives, like, a layer to it that I never thought of before with an extremely anachronistic example. But a fantastic example. So let's see where he goes, okay? Lahoros. Okay, read it again. Taram yovo el sipur hatzara asher yali Yisrael. Before we get into the troubles that Bnei Yisrael get into, hikdim refua lamaka. First we hear that the cure is already being set into place. Lahoros. What does this teach us? What does this teach us? Ki hamaka eno laman hakos, rak laman yirape. This teaches us not only about Hashem, that Hashem sets up the refuah before the maka, etc., etc., like, right, like, from the vantage point that I just said, but that hamaka eno, it teaches us something about the punishment, right? It teaches us something about the troubles that Bnei Yisrael are about to be in. It teaches us a perspective on that, which is what? Hamaka eno laman hakos, rak laman yirape. That the whole point of the trouble, or the maka, the ailment that they are about to get into, is only for the sake of healing. Right? It makes you stronger, but like, it makes you strong. Like, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. It's not only that. It's like, what doesn't kill you is meant to heal you. Right? And the whole part of the trouble is really just for the sake of being healed. Here's this example. Kimo, like what? Shemikis dam. Shemichin techila hadvarim hatzrichim lahashki merutzas hadam. That they set up all the instruments that they need to use to draw the blood out. Ula atzro ula hashiv nafsho achar hahazaka. In order to really revive his soul after they hurt him. What's he talking about? Bloodletting. Good, Rachel. Bloodletting, right? This was a, not even ancient, because Imam is not old enough to be ancient, a past medical massive error called bloodletting. I meant to look up a little bit more about it beforehand, which I didn't. But their basic assumption was that if somebody was sick, and especially if they were extremely sick, then there was something wrong with their blood. And if they took blood out and let new blood replenish itself in the person's body, this would help them heal. Okay, the premise was aired, the practice was aired, which is why there's no bloodletting now. And it's chaval, because really what it did was like basically make somebody who's sick donate blood, which just weakens their systems and pretty chaval. We hope that nothing that we do these days is that, but probably there is. Anyways, right, so bloodletting, what's he talking about? What do you do in bloodletting, right? You have to make some sort of like hole in the person's body, right? Probably in a vein or somewhere, in order to draw out some of the blood. But again, assuming that bloodletting is a medical practice, as the Malbim was assuming when he gave this example, right? When you poked that hole to take out their blood, right? You have just injured them more. True or not true? True. Objectively. You have just made another... This person is sick, right? You've just made another thing that's wrong with their body, which is not that they have a hole in their arm. But you've only made them more sick because you are in the process of making them more healthy. So the whole point of that little, like, again, you could think about it like someone getting stitches, right? The first part of getting stitches, you have something wrong with your body, right? You were slicing an onion and you sliced your thumb and now you have to go get stitches. So the first thing they do in stitches is make another hole in your body. Without having stitches, you go to an emergency room, they do that, you could sue, like, you know, you could sue them for a lot of money. You can't just poke me with needles for the sake of it, because, like, you think it's fun, you masochist, you, so, what's the other word for it? It has an S and a D. What? Sadist. Like, sardonic is not the right word. You sadist, right? You sadist. You can't just poke, right? So the first thing they do is make another issue with your body. But the whole point of making that new hole in your body is to heal the hole that already exists. Right? That is refuah lifnei hamaka, to show us that any maka, it's an incredible thought. I don't know why it blew my mind. Like, right? Any issue that exists, any trouble that exists, it's for the sake, it's just like that first punctuation for bloodletting, right? Which is a bad example. It's like that first cut for surgery, for appendicitis. I had appendicitis, right? It's that first incision that they make to take out the rotten appendix. It's only for the sake of healing, but it's true. It's objectively another thing that you're making wrong with my body. I still have the scar. I don't still have my appendix, but I still have the scar from the appendix. I don't know why I said that like it was like a chiddush. Okay, right? Let's go. Retzel lamar. Shelo asim alecha. Oh, okay, one second. V'zal zamar. And on this we say, kol ha-machala. This is a quote. Oh, I meant to look this up too, guys. I'm so sorry. I did not do my homework so well. I actually was pretty proud of myself for being so prepared. I spent the day in the emergency room with my baby who is allergic to eggs. So that was not what I expected to spend my day doing. And then I still had time to review before. And I'm like, I'm not even going to disclaim in the beginning of this chabura that I didn't prepare well enough. Like, yeah, we're going to rock it. But I did not look up all these extra stuff, which I meant to. Chatasai, ani maskir hayom. I apologize. You guys deserve more than that. Okay, that being said, kol machalei asher samti misarim lo asim alecha ki ani Hashem rofecha. I think is in Devarim, but I actually don't know where it is. Okay, but it's from the Torah, I think. I'll look it up.
Question.
Yes.
I know you're middle of thought, so tell me if I should ask the question soon.
Yeah, ask it at the end of this because he's going to go on. He's going to elaborate on the idea. Ready?
No, it's about something from before, but
I know. But just wait till he. Okay. Yeah, and maybe it might give you insight or strengthen the question or one of the two things. Okay. Ready. Azeh Amar, Kol Machala, quote, Kol Machala, Asher Samti Misarim, Lo Asim Alecha, Ki Ani Hashem Rofecha. Right, this is a quote that says, all of the illnesses, all of the ailments that I sent upon Mitzrayim, I will not send upon you, because I am Hashem, your healer. Ritzel Amar, what does this mean to say? Shelo Asim Alecha HaMachala, Al Derech, Shesamtiha B'Mitzrayim. I will not give you ailments in the way that I gave them in Mitzrayim. How did Hashem give the ailments in Mitzrayim to the Mitzrayim? As a form of punishment, right? You deserve it. This is your punishment. Shehaya ikir hakavana leman hakos harasha. The ikir of the kavana there was to strike down the evil, was to pay back the evil that they have done. Rock, rather, how does Hashem interact with Bnei Israel? Rock, asim ha-machala mitzad sha'ani Hashem rofecha. Here, the only maka, right, the only ailments we ever get are those first punctuations and an appendix surgery. It's a trouble in order for Hashem to heal us. Umitzad zeh yaktim harfua lamaka. And that's what we mean when we say that Hashem precedes the refua to the maka. Kizos ikar akavana. Alkein echar shehiktim ha'achana harishona. Shezimen Hashem l'rafos. Right after this introduction now to Megillah. That we understand that Hashem has already set in the pieces to heal them. Hashem wants to be healed. No one starts an appendix surgery without the suture to sew up the wounds, right? Without those pieces to keep the scar that I'm going to have, like, you know, to stitch it all back up together and to put something on the scar, right? That's how you start the surgery. So Hashem has set the stage here to heal them. Shazimen Hashem l'rapos shever amo b'ma shehizmin lahem achos b'veis hamelech. He set a sister. I love the phrasing of this. He gave them a sister. He gave them a serious ally. He gave them a sister in the king's house. Esther It tells about the second preparation that Hashem made. It gives Mordechai like a massive debt that the king owes him because Mordechai saved his life. So again, my perspective like really shifted a little bit. Again, especially after. And not after and during and whatever, as I was learning this, as I was preparing it, as I was thinking about it, spending the day in the emergency room with my son who I named Rafael for this reason, which is like a weird irony that I'm dealing with at the moment, right? But like any trouble that we go through, right, it means that we're sick already, right? That's what it means. Anything that I have to go through, it's not that that is a punishment for something that I'm doing. It means there's an issue that Hashem is trying to solve by giving me something that I have to contend with, by giving me something that I have to deal with. And then as I deal with that, Hashem is coming in with the refuah. Hashem has set the stage already for the refuah. So it's not that it's a tit for tat punishment. It's that like there's something that I need to tap into that must be healed. And anytime I have something happening to me, it's for the sake of getting to the something behind it and healing it. Again, like, you know, right now I was like, I rushed to the emergency room. I like spent the day in the emergency room just trying to entertain my 7-month-old baby who's hard to entertain. And then I came back home and like, thank God he's fine. He reacted well to Benadryl and they gave me an EpiPen. Just go off. Right. Have I been healed? No. Cause I didn't take any actual time like thinking about it or introspecting or saying to him or really davening or really other than checking with my rabbi whether or not I should like change my baby's name, which doesn't really count. Right. Like, What did I do? Was I healed? Like, how did I take this maca? The maca was for healing. So which part of me needs to be healed? And how do I tap into that? So to me, it was like a big change in perspective. And again, another one of the lessons embedded in the Megillah. Bracha, take it away.
So just question about the Malvim and